Inside Security Podcast with Martin and Steve Yvette and Little Joe. News Yankee Steve giving weekly updates. Armor guy managing the microphones. Joe sits there and sparkles while the vet's in the airport. Andy Googles Microsoft on his iPhone. A family-friendly bucket full of southern goodness. What will they be ranting about this week?
It's episode 203 of the Southern Fried Security Podcast. Really glad you're joining us today. My name is Martin Fisher, I'm one of the hosts. And we've managed to gather most of the crew here to have a conversation, kind of continuing our thoughts on how you can evaluate your security program. Today we're going to be talking about threat mapping. Joining us, Steve Reagan. How are you, sir?
I am good. How are you?
I'm peachy, as we say here in the great state of Georgia. Also, Yvette Johnson, we don't know where she is, but we know that there's somewhere there's going to be a mixed drink.
That is true. I am well, and it's awesome that we are here in 2018, still doing what we do.
They still pull down these episodes and listen. Actually, I'm thinking some of the Russian bots who like got involved in the election may actually just listen to us and. That's maybe a conversation.
They learned something.
Yeah, maybe that's a conversation you and I need to have over some coffee over another day. Also, Joseph Scully is here. Joseph, how are you, sir?
It is a fuchsia day, Martin. It is just you know, it's fuchsia. It's just it's hard to qualify.
Absolutely, and you know if it's you know a fuchsia kind of day, you know which protective actions you need to be taking. So. Joseph, we're continuing our conversation around evaluating our security programs.
We are. So this is the second in our series around evaluating your security program. Episode number 202, we kind of talked through awareness and education. And so what we're continuing that conversation today with threat mapping. We've talked a little bit about why to evaluate your program, but Martin, do you want to kind of sum that up again for folks who may have missed the previous episode?
Sure. It comes down to this. Guys, it's part of your annual policy review. If you don't evaluate, you will never improve. And if you don't improve, you're lost. And remember, continual review, continual improvement will help protect and enhance your budget. And yes, at some point in leadership, your main focus is about budget, not about hackers.
Got it. And So today we're talking about threat mapping. In a future episode, we'll probably be talking a bit about communications, the final turn from the inside out. But to get us started, I think it's important to actually define what threat mapping is. I know when I read this headline or the outline title here, I looked at it and I went, like threat modeling. But it's not quite like threat modeling. And Steve, you had a really good definition for us as we were discussing this episode. So do you want to go ahead and kind of explain what is threat mapping?
Sure. So most everybody's familiar with threat modeling. So in that context, I want you to consider this. You have an organization, and as you start to do your threat model, you consider all of the types of bad things that could happen to you. And now you're going to rank them in order from most likely to least likely. That's your model. So you know what's possible. And now you know what's really possible and what's not really possible. So let's start with the financial thing. And let's say you're in the financial sector. And so the top threat model is – or the top of the threat model is a DDoS attack. So now you know that your threat model is a DDoS attack. That's one of the things you need to be aware of and prepare against. Your threat map is when you take that model and map it to every asset in your organization. So if somebody's going to DDoS me, what are the likely targets? How are they going to go down? What can I do to defend myself? And if this sounds familiar, some of you may actually know this as attack path analysis. They're very similar. This is how I've always focused on it and understood it. So that's if you're wondering why I'm going on a tangent, that's it. So once you have your model, your attack, your threat map after the model is basically looking at your assets that you know and determining how that model applies to each asset. And then from after that, you're going to kind of address how you need to go about it dealing with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great place to get started. And Martin, I know that you've kind of been working through this threat mapping process kind of day to day recently. Do you want to kind of talk us through, now that we know what the definition is, how to get started in threat mapping?
Yeah, just really quickly, and we're looking at creating some bonus content that'll dive a little bit deeper into this. But one of the things you've got to be able to do is have an assessment or asset management program, a vuln management program. You need to know what you have, because if you don't know about it, you can't protect it. So that's actually one of the key things you want to evaluate. Do you have an effective asset management program? This is not, I have a CMDB, right? CMDBs can be wonderful, but generally speaking, the CMDB, in my experience, takes a lot of work to use effectively, and we'll just leave that there. You also need to understand what your real threats are. And so I'm gonna throw a little bit of security heresy out there. Things like Spectre and Meltdown are not your real threats for most of you. I know.
No.
I know it's shocking. Things like DDoS are. The threats that I face at a healthcare provider are different than the threats that a vet faces at a startup company, and it's different than the threat that Steve faces at as a journalist, and it's different than the threats that you face working for a nameless large corporation, right? And what you have to do is you have to be honest about what your real threats are. And again, it's about honesty, and it's about being pragmatic and realizing that not all of your big threats are necessarily cybers, right? Information security is a lot about, availability. And, here in Atlanta in the summer, we worry about things like thunderstorms and tornadoes and things of that nature that can destroy your ability to actually have availability in your network. I guess for me, that resonates because I'm also responsible for some of the business continuity DR at my job. So you need to figure out what your real threats are. And there's ways to figure out what that is. I mean, within your industry, a lot of times in the industry, you share certain threat models in healthcare, in financial services, in retail, what have you. You got to look at where your entry points are. You need to figure out what your technology stack looks like. In healthcare, we have a very broad technology stack. In most large retail organizations, it's a much more standardized, cookie cutter sort of deployment. And if you really, really, really are getting down where you've really matured this process out, there's a lot of online information you can get. But the last thing is just, and this was a question I had probably a couple, 3 months ago. Threat mapping is also not pew pew maps. Just please don't do that. No self-respecting security professional should do that. So yeah, that's kind of where you figure out where the threats are. Then again, this is where you then get to the mapping side, like Steve was talking about, is you have to figure out what controls do you have in place to mitigate or reduce that risk. Using DDoS as an example, right? There are technological solutions to help you in the event of a DDoS event, like Steve was talking about, but there's also business process stuff. If you're being DDoSed in financial services, part of your process needs to be, how do I communicate with my customers that there's going to be service outages? If you're being DDoSed inside of, a telecommunications business, that's a different matter. So there's technical controls, there's administrative controls, there's business processes that you have to have in place to mitigate or reduce that risk. And at the end of the day, from a security perspective, it generally breaks down into incident response playbooks. Threat modeling leads to threat mapping. Threat mapping at the end of the day should yield incident response playbooks.
Now, I want to jump back real quick because you were on a roll there and I didn't want to interrupt. But
yeah, me neither. I had a point to make too, and I was like, keep going.
All right. So I want to jump back real quick because you hit something early on when you were talking about what your real threats are that I think is an important distinction for the listener. Why is Meltdown and Spectre, these big high profile, big name vulnerabilities, why aren't they your real threats?
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Teacher, call on me.
Steve, why aren't they your real threats?
Because, A, they've existed for a long time, and you've had plenty of other threats to deal with before these two things came along. And, B, they're going to exist long after you try to do anything else about them. More likely, you're going to be DDoSed before somebody tries to use Spectre or Meltdown against you. But what a lot of people don't realize is Spectre and Meltdown, they're delivery vehicles. That's the car pulling up in your driveway, not the pizza. All you care about is the pizza. In this case, that would be malware, and you don't want that. But you don't care about the Buick. When you get attacked, an adversary may use Spectre or Meltdown to deliver their ultimate payload to you, but the attack isn't Spectre or Meltdown. The attack is ransomware. The attack is, you know, data exfiltration or a data breach. It's not Spectre or Meltdown.
Yeah, and on top of that, and this is where I think I'm going to listen for a scream from somewhere in North Carolina as I say, you have to figure out some sort of quantification as to the likelihood and impact of that threat, right? It is a DDoS is much more likely than getting hit by something using Spectre or Meltdown. As much as we are attracted to vulnerabilities and exploits that have logos, websites, and theme songs, those are rarely, and of course your mileage may vary, but they're rarely the biggest threat you're facing on any given day. I am much more worried about a self-propagating piece of malware in my environment than, you know, all of a sudden, you know there's a Spectre or a targeted nation state attack. Very few of us are ever going to be a targeted nation state attack is not a reality for most of us. And if it was, there's nothing we could do about it. So it just takes a little bit of pragmatism to go, what do I really need to worry about? What happens every day in my environment? What do I really need to be worried about?
Gotcha.
So another thing that I was going to chime in on earlier while you were going through the stuff there, Martin, was the fact that when it comes to being honest with yourself and these types of threats that come at your organization, very few of you, and this kind of touches on what you just said, very few of you are going to have Russia as your threat model or China as your threat model. Everybody has Russia and China as your threat model. But again, just like you said, if Russia or China decides to target you, there's nothing you can do. And no matter what fancy box a vendor is going to sell you or what fancy threat intelligence feed they may offer you, that doesn't change the fact that, you know, if somebody opens an attachment that is ransomware, well, China didn't do that, and your threat intelligence feed isn't going to help you on that point. So now you've got to deal with ransomware. Where exactly did that fall into your threat model? And 2-3 years ago, ransomware really was a thing that was kind of hyped up, but you didn't see it widespread, and now it's everywhere. So that kind of changes things when it comes to your honesty. You have to really consider the actual risks and not the stuff that you're just seeing in the headlines. And this sounds weird coming from a journalist, but just because it's flashy and it's making all this news doesn't mean it immediately impacts you. And for most of you, it never will.
Exactly.
Gotcha. So if you have, kind of determined what your real threats are, and you've mapped some of your known threats, that's going to be a tremendous amount of data for any decent sized organization. How do you prioritize it? How do you scope that out?
I think it's going to be different in different verticals. And I'll speak to healthcare, right? Patient safety is the most important thing we do. So as we do threat modeling and threat mapping, our initial focus are on things that could cause a patient safety incident. After that, we talk about integrity of patient data. It would be really bad for that allergy you have to penicillin to disappear from your medical record. And then you get the doctor not knowing gives you penicillin and you go into anaphylactic shock. And after that, we worry about the confidentiality of it, which is oddly sort of the reverse way most industries look at the triad, right? And it's going to be different for different people. And you need to figure out what's appropriate in your industry and in your company. It needs to reflect the values and the mission of your company. And if you're at a bank, it's going to look different than you, or if you're at a hospital, which is different than if you're at a retailer
or at a telecom company or you know, nameless large corporation. It's just going to vary.
Or a newsroom, for example.
Yeah.
One of my I just said Russia and China is probably never going to apply to you. Well, it does apply to me. But the thing is, they can if I ever got targeted by a nation state, I'm done. There's nothing I could do about that. But my biggest asset is my sources and the conversation that I have between them. So that's very sensitive information, and that has to be protected at all costs. So when I do my threat map, I consider who's going after my sources and my information, why they would do that, and now how would they go about doing that. And that's when I start looking for what I can protect and where. Now, the really interesting thing is it's actually easier for some of my more sensitive contacts. I never have a digital trail to them. It's always face-to-face, and it's always a conversation. Rarely will I ever use a social media or an email to communicate with them. But if I do, it's fully encrypted.
Right.
If anybody was to ever capture those comms, you can't read them.
So I think one of the things, though, is how do we measure this, right? Because I think as programs mature, it becomes easier. But for someone who is just now getting a program going, this is hard, right? Getting to the point of how you measure. Key risk indicators are probably the nirvana we're looking for in creating some sort of scorecard around it. And at some point, we'll create an episode about how to do a risk scorecard. But most places have a risk registry where you can list and rank rate and prioritize the risks that you feel your organization has. And again, one of your measurements can be is, hey, for your top 50% of your risks or whatever, do you have those covered by an effective, threat map? Are they being addressed at some point? That's a place to start the measurement. And then as you begin to improve and modify the program, you can use that risk registry or if you're using a GRC tool or just, Excel spreadsheets, right? I think Excel is the most commonly used GRC tool in the world. You need to keep management updated. You need to keep them on board. You need to keep this out in front of them. Because this is pretty esoteric. This is pretty hard. Yvette, I know you've had, challenges, in the past having these conversations with clients and management.
Well, I want to go back to your point about risk registry. I have a love-hate relationship with developing a risk registry because I've seen them do more harm than good. I think, yes, it is good for you to document this, but I've seen them grow to something like, you're tracking 300 risks. At that point, are you just tracking them? Are you just adding risks into there and nothing's really being mitigated? I think stuff like that is crazy. I also want to make sure that, that's an auditor question too, is do you have a risk registry? Sometimes my concern is that an auditor puts their eyes on your risk registry and maybe they learn something about your environment that they didn't know before. And they start they start peeling back the onion. So I think you have to be really careful. That's why I say I have a love-hate relationship with the risk registry. I think it is a good thing, but it can potentially be a bad thing. And especially when you're tracking those risks, and are you going to truly mitigate them, or are you just putting them into an Excel spreadsheet and saying, here, I have a risk registry? That's pretty ineffective.
Well, especially if the number one mitigation is risk accepted.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about that, about what do you do? Do you accept the risk? Do you transfer the risk? Do you mitigate it? You have to determine what your level is and what the type of risk is. So some things are just not worth your time. But you have to make sure that you saying this is not worth our time as an organization, that you can back that up, because maybe legal thinks it is worth the time to spend on mitigating that risk.
Right. And I think one of the things that I want to make sure we stress with what you said is once you have something on your risk register, you can't ignore it. It's now a documented thing that, to your point, auditors, regulators, they're going to come in there.
Legal
is going to say, you said that this is a risk. What are you doing to mitigate? Well, we just put that on the list because we had to put something on the list. Oh, that's going to be a really awful conversation. That's going to be a really uncomfortable conversation.
Especially if something bad happens to your environment, because then they're going to point back to that risk register and say, you knew about this.
Right.
And you didn't do anything about it.
And so for one of the basics you can do, right? A lot of this is, ITIL 101, IT 101. You know, having solid change control and change management processes do a lot to improve your risk process. You want to make sure those risk stores are updated, because this is going to be driving, focusing on the really important stuff. And again, there's no one of these days we'll have Alex Hutton on and we'll talk about quantifying risk. It's very hard to do, and almost any of it's going to be very subjective, but you got to pick something and go with it. And then that will help drive the prioritization. So you can create a defensible program of why you did what you did based on the risks as you understood them.
You know, speaking of Alex, I sat in on one of the talks that one of his consultants gave at B-Sides Las Vegas this last year. And she did a really good job at, you know, talking about what risk management is and the risk register. And I asked that question. Are you sure, you know, because like I said, I have this love or hate relationship with a risk registry. So I asked that question, you know, why do I have to have a risk registry? Am I signing myself up for something bad with the auditors or with legal or with somebody? Or, you know, help me understand why this is important that I do this. And I wish I could remember her name, but she did work for Alex. And she gave really good points about why it's valuable and why it's important to document those and to have and how you can measure risk management in your organization.
Right. So that's pretty much it, Joseph. I mean, this is probably a little bit shorter of an episode than some, but my thought is we're gonna be spending some time talking about threat modeling and threat mapping in the future. Potentially some bonus content, potentially some additional episodes, but this is definitely something that you know, senior individual contributors and security management folks, you need to start getting comfortable with and familiar with, because this is how the outside parties are going to start evaluating what we do.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good place to start for this.
So with that, wow, time flies when we're having fun. On behalf of everybody here at the podcast, including the still missing but beloved Andy Willingham, my name is Martin Fisher. Glad you could join us, and good night.
Night, everybody.
Good night.
The Southern Fried Security Podcast is hosted by Martin Fisher, Andy Willingham, Steve Rakin, Joseph Ciccoli, and Yvette Johnson. The views expressed by all participants are their own and don't necessarily reflect the views of their employers. The podcast is produced by Martin Fisher and Joseph Ciccoli. You can find more information about the podcast at www.southernfriedsecurity.com and through the podcast Twitter feed at SFS Podcast.